This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a great pleasure to welcome back to Greening of the Great Lakes Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow, who was recently in Lansing to attend an agriculture and climate change conference sponsored by the Agricultural Leaders of Michigan. Senator Stabenow, always good to see you.
Well, Kirk, it's really great to be back with you and to be a part of a very important discussion right now of what's happening in terms of weather changes, the severe weather that's affected our farmers and ranchers in Michigan and all across the country, from the droughts of last year to the warming up north last year and then the late freezes that wiped out our cherry crop for last year. Fortunately, that's not the case this year, but we're seeing real volatility and changes in the weather, and that's a very important thing to discuss and what we can do about it.
Senator, now that this climate change really is no longer a debate, the scientific evidence is clear. Farmers aren't typically your most liberal people in the world, but from your experience, they get it on climate change, don't they?
Well, the reality is, I mean, they are where the rubber hits the road. I mean, you know, the reality is they're seeing, on the one hand, a longer growing season, but much more volatile. We've seen temperatures going up. There's more water usage. There's concern about droughts. But we're also seeing these great storms that have come that you just don't know what's going to happen because they're much more intense. We did a hearing last February on severe weather in the U.S. Senate Agriculture Committee. And one of the things that we heard from the folks involved in monitoring this through the USDA is that we always have storms, but issues around climate change are making those storms longer and much more severe. And so that's having a tremendous impact on this. There are things we can do. Farmers are really leading the way when we get into how we manage crops, how we keep more carbon in the soil, no-till practices, cover crops that keep soil on the ground are very important. Using bioenergy, taking the waste from the farm and turning it into energy with biodigesters. More farmers are putting solar panels on the roof and using wind or hydro or other kinds of technologies that are getting us off of oil and have less of a carbon footprint. So I think, as usual, Michigan farmers are going to really be ahead and leading the way nationally.
In your remarks earlier, Senator, you mentioned the solar panels on a dairy farmer here in Michigan actually paid for the panels over the course of 3 years. But it's good for the environment, but it's also good for the bottom line, right?
Oh, there's no question. Energy efficiency is good for the bottom line. And so that's why I think this is a very important conversation. It's a win-win. Yeah, it's good economically. And at the same time, it's good long-term when we look at the fact that if we are moving to a low-carbon economy, we've got long-term savings as well as direct short-term savings. And by the way, the long-term savings are in things like crop insurance. We've seen in the last year much more being spent in outputs and indemnities through crop insurance than we have seen in the past because of the severity of the droughts, the severity of other wind and other, you know, storm-related kinds of activities, flooding and so on. And so we've got more payout coming to cover the risks that are happening, which cost taxpayer money, cost the individual farmer money. So we save in a number of fronts. When we're able to mitigate the risks, then we bring down the costs of dealing with severe weather, and we also, through energy efficiency, increase more money in the pocket to farmers.
And the Farm Bill's in conference now, and I must say in the Senate it's been an excellent bipartisan effort that you've spearheaded. But linked in this Farm Bill, these are the things about conservation and energy efficiency. There are major titles in the Farm Bill that you support. Are those going to endure through conference?
I feel very confident that our strong, new and improved conservation title is going to make it through into the final bill as well. This really strengthens various tools that we have available to partner with farmers on better management of land and water, protecting our resources, dealing with runoff, into our waters and so on. The energy title that we have is different than what the House has in that they have a title, but they don't have any real funding in it. So we have real funding in ours, and I'm confident we'll end up somewhere in the middle on our energy titles.
And I know you've got to run, but the last question, again, you're in conference, the proceedings, you're sitting there at the table with a lot of your counterparts in the House and in the Senate. Are you confident we're going to get this farm bill done?
I am confident. We have to get it done. 16 million people whose jobs come from agriculture in our country are counting on us to get it done. And I said to my colleagues, this is a chance to show that we can govern. That's what people want us to do, come together with common sense and govern. And we've got to make sure we don't let those folks down.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I've been talking with Senator Debbie Stabenow, who's been working for quite a long time on the Farm Bill in a very bipartisan way. She chairs the Senate Ag Committee. Senator Stabenow, always great to see you.
It's great to be with you.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. Making a Michigan State University education accessible to all is a key pillar of President Simon's Boulder by Design initiative. And that's why MSU Alumni Association chapters around the world raise hundreds of thousands of dollars in scholarship money each year. Our members share our belief that the same educational experiences we enjoyed should be available to future generations of Spartans. That's why we support MSU's innovative Grandparents University, where you and your grandchild can learn from some of Michigan State's most gifted professors. It's why we touch thousands of lives each year with our career enrichment seminars. And it's why MSU Alumni Association chapters are among the first to welcome new students at dozens of annual freshman family picnics in every city from Detroit to D.C. The MSU Alumni Association was founded to add Spartan value throughout your Spartan life. If you share this Spartan spirit, join us at alumni.msu.edu.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Here's MSU Today contributor Warren Pierce with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman together.
Checking in on our direct line now, the 13th and current president of the University of Michigan announcing this past April that she would retire next July. Mary Sue Coleman is joining us, and so is the host president, 20th and current president of MSU, also presently serving, I think, as the chair of the executive committee of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. And Luana Simon, good to have you this morning. And while it's very competitive on the athletic field, why don't you both tell us how, what shall I say, cooperative in the field of education the two schools have worked together. Right, Luana?
That's true, and it's really because of Mary Sue's leadership early on. When I became president, we were able to think about and create the University Research Corridor to bring us closer together, and Mary Sue was a terrific advocate for our EFRIT project as well.
What kind of, Mary Sue Coleman as president, what kind of projects did the two schools work together on?
Well, you know, we are together through the URC really advocating for higher education in Michigan. And for our advocacy, that is when we work together at the national level and at the state level, that sends a message through the entire university. So our research vice presidents get together. We talk about ways that we can support each other when we are going in for big projects. We found a lot of collaborations that have happened faculty to faculty that, you know, just didn't happen before because people didn't pay attention to it. But when the presidents pay attention, then other people within the institution pay attention as well. And it has been one of the most one of the proudest things for me that I've done, I think, it with Luana and the state, that we've been able to create this this working relationship. In fact, just last week, Luana, we were together at a meeting at the White House about supporting higher education, and particularly supporting higher education for students who don't have ready access, perhaps through financial means to come. So I think our combined voices are more powerful than our voices alone.
President Salmon, President Coleman talking about the impact the cost of college are these days. The financial burden of paying for college has families, as near as I can figure, cost-cutting before their kids even apply to the schools. And some say it's affecting the students' decisions about not only where to go, but what to study. What do you make of these reports that are coming out?
Well, I think if you look at public institutions like Michigan and Michigan State, we rely heavily to balance tuition on state support. A recent study has indicated that state support in Michigan has declined significantly. I think that's why the business leaders from Michigan are so actively engaged in trying to restore support for higher education. But also, I think for our two institutions, we've aggressively supported financial aid programs through private support as well as reallocation of university resources. So even though our profiles include many students from disadvantaged backgrounds, many of them are coming to our institutions without any debt.
Hmm. And you were talking, President Coleman, about being at the White House. What do you make of the President, Barack Obama, calling higher education, obviously, an economic imperative and is pushing or has been pushing for what is a supposedly a very ambitious new government rating system for colleges that would judge schools on affordability and performance and ultimately determine how federal financial aid would be distributed?
Well, I think what the president is trying to highlight and using his voice to really speak about is how important it is for nations who want to compete in the global marketplace to invest in their young people and to invest in education. I mean, this is so important. And if we look around the world and we see what other countries are doing, and in fact what other states are doing, it's not just a global competition, it's a competition within our nation. It is really, really important that we step up again, as we did after World War II with the GI Bill and brought so many people out of poverty and into great careers. So those are the issues that he's talking about. You know, there are some conversations going about on a rating system. I don't know about how that might play out. But the important thing that he is saying is that as a society, we need to invest and we need to create a new partnership. You know, families have a responsibility, states have a responsibility, industry has a responsibility, and we need philanthropy as well. And we're trying to do all of those. And Luana and I talk about that all the time. And I think we've found ways in which you know, both of our institutions have been very successful in being able to keep ourselves going, but the future is murky, and we need to keep talking about it because it's very important for the state.
In the meantime, President Salmon, it looks like turnabout is fair play. What was it, a couple of weeks after President Coleman and the University of Michigan announced that they would award you an honorary doctoral degree? You kind of turn around and say, hey, you know what? Maybe we'll do the same thing for the outgoing 13th president of the University of Michigan. Is that how it unfolded in your office?
Well, not quite. They have the press announcements unfolded. But this is a long tradition between Michigan State and the University of Michigan, and I think dates back to the John Hanna Shapiro days.
Hmm.
And it's one of the things that I think comes out of the leadership that the institutions have had over time, and I know I'm truly honored to be recognized by the University of Michigan. I know Mary Sue is going to provide extraordinary comments to our graduate students about not only the lay of the land in terms of their careers, but a way of thinking about the future.
Well, and knowing how competitive the two schools are, President Coleman, I would assume you'll both get warm welcomes showing up at the opponent's school during December and commencements.
Well, you know, we are competitive on the field and competitive on the court, but I think our students understand and our faculty certainly understand that we are admire each other enormously and admire our institutions. And these are two gems for the state. And so it is our complete pleasure to be able to make that manifest by recognizing Luana Simon. And I and everybody, I think, at our institutions understands that.
Mm. And you and I, President Simon, have talked about the significance of athletics on the college campuses versus academics. You have a Circlertron, other kind of academic activities going on, inventions. And what do people remember most? It's what happens on a Saturday afternoon.
Well, some people.
Yeah, right.
That's right, Luana, just some people.
but I think that, athletics at its best prepares, as Mary Sue said, students for life. And we're about the student athlete and preparing students for life, and I think both institutions have done that extraordinarily well. Hmm. In addition, athletics does provide a connection point that no matter what your major is, no matter what your interest area is, we can all come together and root for our individual teams on any given day. And that's a real advantage for the kind of connections and passion that you need to have. It's just a matter of making sure that it's part of what we do, not all of what we do.
President of Michigan State, Luana Simon, and President of the University of Michigan, Mary Sue Coleman.
That was MSU Today contributor Warren Pierce talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. How many times have you been wearing your Spartan apparel in an airport and a voice in the crowd shouts, "Go Green"? Well, that's happened to me in Beijing, Osaka, Kuala Lumpur, and Mumbai, and even in unlikely places like Ann Arbor and Columbus. There's a special bond we Spartans share, and that's at the foundation of everything we do at the MSU Alumni Association. As the world's largest organization of Spartans helping Spartans, MSUAA truly is your personal network for life. From the moment you join, you've added thousands of fellow Spartans to your personal network, people who will pick up the phone and lend a hand just because you share Michigan State in common. That's the ethic that makes Spartans leaders, lifesavers, and world changers. And that's exactly what you'll find when you become an active member of the MSU Alumni Association. If you share this Spartan spirit, join us at alumni.msu.edu.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Please find us on Facebook by searching for Greening of the Great Lakes and follow us on Twitter at Green Michigan.
Well, as the holiday season approaches, a lot of folks plan on preparing and eating fish as a tasty and nutritious alternative to meat and poultry. And to help ensure that consumers can be confident about the safety of that fish, the Michigan Department of Community Health has recently introduced the 2013-2014 Eat Safe Fish Guide. And here to tell us about the guide is Michelle Bruneau, who's the project coordinator and educator for the Michigan Department of Community Health. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kirk. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, a lot of us are doing fish. We're still doing some meat and poultry and all that, but fish is a very healthy alternative. I think before we get into the specifics of Eat Safe Fish, what can you say in general to consumers about the safety of the fish in our Great Lakes? In general, is it a pretty good story?
It kind of depends. There's definitely better choices for everybody, and it's a matter of knowing which fish are the best fish to eat. So, you know, fish are very healthful. We do want people to eat them, of course, because there are a lot of great benefits to that. But it's just knowing which fish to choose.
Right. And knowing which fish to choose and how to prepare that fish, very important. And you cover some of that. Tell us about the 2013-2014 Eat Safe Fish Guide.
Well, this is going to be a whole new guide from what everybody has seen for the last 40 years. Many people don't know we've actually had fish advisories out for the last 40 years. We now have been working with focus groups and groups around the state to develop this new guide that's going to be much easier for people to use. It is based, you know, with single servings, my servings instead of meals. So you can kind of look at your plate and know what you're eating based on 8-ounce portions using your hand as a guide. So you can know what you're eating and how much. And then we also make it easier for people to just follow along as opposed to using all those squares and triangles like we used to have. If anybody had used the guide that's on our website currently, it's kind of difficult to follow along.
Yeah, in the past, I think you've called them advisories, and they have not been quite as user-friendly. But I got to tell you, I went online, and I did the little survey on the Eat Safe Fish Guide. It was very user-friendly.
Great. Well, thank you very much. It's been something we've been working on for the last 2-3 years to really make it easier for people. We are calling them guidelines because it is important for people to understand that guidelines are just a suggestion. No one has to follow these. These are not regulatory. It's not a rule that you have to follow the guidelines. It's information for people to use to make better choices, kind of like a nutrition label. Mm-hmm. Nutrition labels have information. You can look at the box or you can choose to ignore it and, you know, eat all the candy you want. So it's the same idea. It's some things are healthier, some things aren't, and we're just making it easier for people to understand.
Well, tell us now, for those people, there are certain populations that are a little bit more at risk, and quite a bit more at risk, actually, than others.
Sure.
Who are some of those folks that are more at risk in terms of contaminants in fish?
Sure. Well, we're always, of course, worried about the smaller individuals in our lives, the babies, the fetuses, the children that are eating fish. Also, you know, obviously pregnant women. And then people that are immunocompromised. So people that might have diabetes, have cancer, other health issues that are chronic and long-lasting, these chemicals can affect them in ways that they might not be aware of. So we really kind of want everybody to pay attention. There's also been new studies that have shown that mercury affects heart rate, and anybody with a heart, which is hopefully everybody, can be affected by too much mercury. So it doesn't matter your age, and this is kind of new science that's coming out that we are really focusing on and trying to get the word out to everybody now.
And the mercury, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michelle, but the mercury is particularly insidious because that does not go into the fat of the fish. The mercury is into the musculature of the fish and much harder to remove, as I understand it.
That is correct. There are chemicals in our fish like PCBs and dioxin that do stay in the fat of the fish. So if you're trimming away as much of the fat as you can see and grilling it or broiling it so that that fat can drip away, then you are really, you know, reducing the chemicals in those fish by up to half. So that's a great thing. Mercury is in the meat of the fish, and so you can't remove it. There's nothing you can do by soaking it or any of the other things that people kind of try. Nothing you can do when it comes to mercury. And so, unfortunately, you really just have to be aware of what's in your fish and move forward with that.
Yeah, one thing reading through your materials, and again, they're very user-friendly, but the mercury problem that we've heard about for many years, it doesn't seem to be a problem that's mitigating. We're still adding a lot of mercury to our Great Lakes by virtue of burning particularly coal.
Yes, that's correct. And unfortunately, it's a worldwide problem. And it's, you know, we can do what we can in Michigan, but with the trade winds and everything, you know, the whole world's policy affects what's in our fish. And you could be, you know, the Great Lakes are one thing, but you could be in the most remote lake in Upper Peninsula and there's still the same mercury problem, which is why we have our statewide guidelines for the fish consumption because of that issue that mercury, unfortunately, is in all of our fish.
And so you make a good point. So it's not necessarily that Michigan or Great Lakes industries are still pumping a lot of mercury into the atmosphere or into the food chain, but this is coming from trade winds from places like China and India.
Absolutely.
And we're certainly aware of some of the pollution problems in those countries.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, it's going to be a problem that will probably increase in the long term. We do see PCBs and dioxins going down in our fish's trends, but mercury is slightly going up or staying the same, which is unfortunate and something that we all need to be aware of. But that's why the FDA even has a mercury advisory, because fish that you pull from oceans have mercury in them, like the tuna and everything. But so do our, you know, our smaller fish here in Michigan.
What are some general things that consumers need to know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can pick the venue. If they go into, if they catch their own fish, number one, or
sure,
if they go into a fish market to buy fish, or if they're ordering from a restaurant. We'll start
sure
with if you're catching your own fish.
Okay, well, if you're catching your own fish, there's 4 rules that you can really follow if you don't have access to use the Safe Fish Guide. There's 4 rules, and you can remember them by remembering to be safe. So it's smaller fish are better. Always avoid bottom feeders and predators. F is for fat. Fat should be removed because, as we mentioned, the some of the chemicals are in the fat of the fish. And then always E is eat fish that have been grilled or broiled. So smaller fish, avoid predators and bottom feeders. Fat should be removed, and eat fish that are grilled or broiled. And by doing that, you're really choosing the safest fish meal that you can, because smaller fish tend to have fewer chemicals in them than the larger fish. Obviously, bottom feeders and predator fish are getting more chemicals in their bodies because the chemicals,
more sediment. They're closer,
right?
To
the chemicals are in the sediment, and so through the food chain, they're getting that chemical in them. It is important to remember, you know, this isn't necessarily affecting water quality. Everybody can still go swimming. You know, it's not anything that you're going to have to worry about touching the water.
I think that's important.
It is because a lot of people are concerned about that, and it's not. It's in the sediment. It's in the food chain, so it's in these little bugs that are in the bottom, and they get eaten by the bigger fish, which are eaten by the bigger fish, and then you know we're out there trying to catch that big trophy fish that right. we want to hang over our mantle, and unfortunately that's, you know, one that should go over the mantle and not necessarily be eaten on your plate. So throw it back, or you know, save it for a picture.
Well, I would think that people who are experienced at fishing and are filleting their own are probably pretty adept and know about fat removal, but someone who goes to a fish market or a grocery store, mm-hmm. You don't know. I mean, how do you know whether there's been fat removed from that? Do you talk to the butcher? I mean, how do you go about it if you're just sort of the casual customer in
sure.
the supermarket?
Well, the great thing is our charter industry and our fish market mongers and everything are very adept at cleaning the fish. So they're very good at it, and they know what to remove. They know what to look for. So the fish that you're buying most likely have had, you know, the best trimming possible, probably better than, you know, the average fisherman could do themselves. So that's a great thing. Unfortunately, you're not going to know how big the fish was before it was filleted.
Right.
And so that's one thing, because obviously those bigger fish, even within the same species, are going to have more chemicals in them than they might have not. But, you know, if you're looking at a fish, you don't see the fat layers, which are usually either brown or white on the edges, then, you know, you're getting the best fish meal. And then if you're grilling it and broiling it, especially these higher contaminated fish, then you're really, you know, doing the best that you can. And if you're not eating it every day and it's something that you kind of spread into your diet, you know, if you want to splurge on the white fish one time and then, you know, eat a lot of bluegill and yellow perch for the rest of the times, then you're doing fine.
And then I would imagine as you go through the whole supply chain, restaurant owners, restaurateurs, and chefs are probably looking for that fish that they buy mm-hmm. from folks that know how to trim the fat off, because, I mean, they want healthy, nutritious fish. So you're probably pretty much assured when you go into a restaurant that you're going to get fish that where the fat has been trimmed.
Yes, absolutely. And the good thing is that, you know, people aren't eating out every day in restaurants. It's
right.
more what people are catching and eating on a regular basis that we're really worried about. It's that chronic, you know, repeat exposure to these chemicals that we're really worried about. And so, you know, if you go out and you splurge, you know, a couple times on some sort of fish that might not be the best, it's really not something you need to worry about on a general basis.
Yeah, and then how you mentioned before, how that fish is cooked has a lot to do with it. If it's grilled, then that fat's necessarily going to just drip right out of the fish.
So. Absolutely, and grilling fish as opposed to frying has other health benefits too, so it's beyond just getting rid of those chemicals.
I'm talking with Michelle Bruneau, who's a project coordinator for the Eat Safe Fish Guide and campaign for the Michigan Department of Community Health. Michelle, back again to the mercury issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the grilling and all that sort of thing doesn't necessarily do a whole lot with respect to mercury. So with respect to mercury, and you hear a lot of people talking about mercury in fish, it's just simply a matter primarily, and correct me if I'm wrong, of choosing the right species.
That's absolutely right. And we actually have developed this new tool that people can use. It's called Eat8, and it allows people to add up to 8 points per month of the fish. And so rather than, like, other guides have said, you know, you can eat this fish twice per week, this fish twice per month, it's hard to put it all together and really understand what that means. So we've assigned points to the fish.
Ah.
And people can get
kinda
that
like
on our
Weight Watcher points.
Exactly. That's where I got the idea. That in Alaska uses it as well. So we have redeveloped this and made it into 8 points per month. And depending on how much mercury is in the fish, you can, you know, choose the points that that add up to 8. And then also we've marked the fish with omega-3. So fish that have a little heart next to them have the highest amounts of omega-3 fatty acids, which are great, you know, heart benefits, brain development for kids. So if you really want to be a safe meal and choose, you know, eat a lot of fish, then choosing fish that are like 1 point, and then the ones that have the heart next to them on our Eat Safe, Eat 8 tool, then you can really have like the best possible meal.
And what would you say to people who say, okay, I've got a choice here at a restaurant or in a supermarket. I can get something from the Great Lakes that has all of this labeling on it, or I can buy something that's been shipped in from the oceans, and maybe I don't know as much about those. Err on the side of Great Lakes fish?
You know, it's what you're comfortable with. Obviously, Great Lakes, we want to support Michigan, and you know where it's coming from. You know how it's been handled, you know, in the general industry. You can use our Eat Safe Fish Guide. You can know that fish have been tested.
You have a number of educational resources, outreach materials. Please tell our listeners where they can go to get more information about all of the things that we've talked about in the last few minutes.
Sure. They can go to our website, which is michigan.gov, www.michigan.gov/eatsafefish.
All one word.
All one word. It's nice and easy. Or they can call us at any time at 1-800-648-6942. That will, I guess not anytime. We're not there 24/7, but it is 8 or 7 to 5. Usually somebody is there that can answer the phone. So again, that number is 1-800-648-6942 or michigan.gov/eatsafefish.
And I would imagine if they just Googled Michigan Eat Safe Fish, they'd probably come right to your website.
I would hope so.
Now, tell us a little bit. This guide is much more detailed, and this guide is not necessarily for everybody because you do have that little self-quiz to determine exactly what level of resource you need.
Sure.
But that guide is really loaded with information.
Well, it's really for people that eat a lot of fish. Like I said, it's chronic exposure to these chemicals that we're worried about. It is set up so that you can, instead of the old version, which was by watershed, which most people don't know what Great Lakes watershed they live in.
No, it's by region, right?
It's by region, yeah. And then it's also by county. So it's going to be much easier for people to use if they're going on vacation or if they're staying at home. They're going to be able to find very easily where they need to look for to find the fish consumption information. And then it's set up by fish. It tells you what chemical is in the fish, so then you can know by looking at it if it's like PCBs or dioxins. If you're trimming and cooking the fish in the right way that we recommend by trimming off the fat and grilling it, then you can actually double the recommendation meals in the guideline. So by doing that, you can really, you know, have the best possible meal, and you can eat a lot more fish than you were if you weren't doing that. Unfortunately, fish that have mercury, since it stays in the fish, you can't double. But it's going to be much easier for people to use. So.
I think it's important to let folks know this guide is based on the best science possible. This is science-based. This is not based on mythology or tradition. It is science-based.
It is science-based. We do test it at the MDCH lab only, so we have control over that. And then we also prepare the fish in a way that you would be preparing it at home. We're not doing whole fish testing for this consumption information. We're doing fillet only. So it's really what you would be eating. It's very scientific. It's very direct, and we hope that people, you know, do use it to choose the better meal.
I've been talking with Michelle Bruneau. She's a project coordinator and educator for the Michigan Department of Community Health. It is the 2013-2014 Eat Safe Fish Guide. Michelle, thanks so much for being on Greening of the Great Lakes.
Thank you so much for having me.
MLive Media Group is a Greening of the Great Lakes partner. To read Kirk's blog and to hear our show archives, please visit mlive.com/environment.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. You know, we live in a time where people just don't join things anymore. So why are so many Spartans joining the MSU Alumni Association? Well, perhaps it's our world-class alumni enrichment team, constantly stretching Spartan minds and supercharging Spartan careers. Or perhaps it's our Spartan pipeline, which connects you to trusted friends wherever your adventures may take you. The MSU Alumni Association is dedicated to adding Spartan value to your Spartan life. Whatever it is that may be keeping you up at night, we can connect you with a fellow Spartan who can help. We truly live in a world where who you know is just as important as what you know. And joining the MSU Alumni Association can help you build the relationships you need for success on the job and in every corner of your Spartan life. That's why more and more Spartans are joining the MSU Alumni Association. Activate your membership right now at alumni.msu.edu.
Hi, I'm Jen Iyer. I'm Statewide Community Engagement Director for MLive Media Group.
And I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
MLive Media Group is the company that owns MLive.com and 8 newspapers across the state of Michigan, including the Grand Rapids Press and the Flint Journal and several others. Being Statewide Community Engagement Director means I oversee all the ways on our editorial side that we engage with our audience. So that includes comments. It means I'm looking at how we do social media. And it means I'm looking at how we engage with our audience on a face-to-face basis in our news hubs across the state. Every day is different, which is one of the reasons I love this job. But on a daily basis, what I'm doing is looking at our site, looking at our content, making sure that we are engaging with our readers in the comments, making sure that we're putting our content in front of the people who care about it on social media and on other channels, and making sure that we're making the most of opportunities in our local communities to find ways to meet with people face-to-face and to forge deeper connections with our readers.
MLive Media Group has 2 goals, says Iyer: to increase audience and engagement.
And we recognize, first of all, I'm going to say that, you know, engagement is sort of a wonky term, but what we mean by engagement is capturing the attention of readers, holding their attention, and somehow motivating them to participate with us in some way. So, you know, that could be voting in a poll, that could be leaving a comment, that could be sharing an article. That's all engagement. We recognize that engagement is important for a couple of reasons. It forges deeper bonds with our readers. It creates more loyalty among readers. And that's really important because we don't come to their doorsteps every day like we did in the old world. And so we can't count on readers seeing what we produce every day. We can't count on them even coming to our website every day, because that's just not how people consume the news anymore. So we recognize that we have to, you know, find ways to you know, capture the attention of our readers and make them understand, you know, that we're producing this great content every day, and it's there. And the more that we are engaging with them, the more they're going to think of coming back to MLive every day, and being regular readers of our content.
While many media outlets shy away from engaging with readers, Iyer says MLive encourages reporters to engage with their readers, including through the comment section on each story.
The biggest way that we do that is through reader comments. Now, it's not a one-way street. It's not just that we accept reader comments on MLive. Our reporters are heavily involved in the comment sections on their stories. And actually, our reporters are given the task of being the guardians of the conversations on their stories. And we do that because we recognize that the comment section is very, very critical. It's a critical part of our mission. You go to any community in which we serve, and, you know, people will, as soon as I mention that I have anything to do with the comments, that's all people want to talk about. People are intensely interested in what their neighbors are saying about the news. And so that's not something we can ignore. And it's not just a matter of not ignoring it. We really have a high level of respect for our commenters. You know, we have the occasional bad egg in the group, but overall, we recognize that these are our readers, these are our neighbors in our communities, and we really respect what they have to say. So our reporters are in there, and they are answering questions. And sometimes they're the ones asking questions of their readers because they want to know what the readers want to know. And we recognize that not only, you know, is it helping, you know, to build a loyalty, a stronger bond with those readers, it's improving the product that we produce because we're getting constant feedback from those readers about how we're doing, what we're doing. And quite frankly, a lot of them, you know, have information on stories that we don't have yet. So there's all kinds of really good things that we get from the comments in our stories.
Iyer says the business challenges for journalism concern her as the fast-paced media world we live in races ahead, but she thinks the journalism taking place today is some of the best ever, and that journalism is even more important as printed newspapers continue to struggle.
The challenges really, it seems to be on the business side, because the state of journalism itself, I think, has never been better. We've never had more opportunities to pick and choose what information sources we want to subscribe to for, you know, next to nothing in most cases, financially, than we do now. And there are organizations that are producing amazing levels of journalism. Our organization, you know, with M Live Media Group, we have a whole team dedicated to enterprise journalism. And, you know, that is a very important part of our mission. It's not just the quick hits that we do. We feel strongly in doing investigative journalism, and we're, you know, supporting that through, you know, the staff that we have dedicated to that. So in my mind, the state of journalism itself, the quality of journalism, is as good as it's ever been. It's just that it comes in different forms, and those forms aren't always recognized by people. You know, they may see a quick hit story and not realize that there was a deeper story that followed it up later. And so they, when they all they see is the quick hit, they think, oh, you know, they hardly went into depth at all on that story. But there's so much information out there that sometimes it's overload, and it's really hard to keep up with everything. That's really one of the critical issues. And so, you know, what we need to do really on a reporter-by-reporter basis is make sure every reporter in our company understands very well who their audience is and how they're going to reach them. Because every reporter, in this company anyway, is responsible to a certain degree on making sure that their stories reach their audience.
MLive's Iyer suggests that today's J-School students continue to focus on job one as they prepare to enter this fast-paced, ever-changing media world we're in. That is, the fundamentals of being a good reporter.
I think, you know, first and foremost, the most important thing, it's as important as it's ever been, is for J-School students to understand the fundamentals of being a good reporter, because those are the things that you, once you're out in the field, it's a lot harder to learn, because you're getting bombarded with, you know, with all the practical, the day-to-day, you know, use this tool, use that tool, try this technique. And if you don't already have the fundamentals of journalism down, the fundamentals of ethics, of the law, of how to work a beat, how to develop a beat, how to develop sources, all of those things, then you're going to be lost. And you're going to get swayed by the forces that are, you know, that are out there that are potentially going to affect your integrity. So that's first and foremost. Then it would be great if journalism grads also had a good understanding of how to use the tools that we have now at our disposal through social media, through good old-fashioned email, and through other ways to reach their audience and to make sure that they understand when I publish a story on a school board meeting, that I understand who in this community is going to care about it and how I'm going to get that story in front of their eyeballs.
Iyer is an MSU J-School alumna.
Oh, gosh, MSU was everything in terms of getting me to where I am. I actually started my college career at the University of Michigan. I did my freshman year there, and then I decided to go into journalism. And so because Michigan didn't have a journalism program, and I will say, because Michigan wasn't quite living up to my expectations in terms of a social scene for my college life, it was a couple of factors that led to my decision to go to Michigan State. So once there, I found that there was just this amazing journalism program led by instructors who just had such a deep knowledge of the fundamentals. I feel like I just got a great education there. And not only that, but through my work at the State News, made so many contacts with talented journalists. You know, my entire cohort from the State News at that time, and that was 95, 96, are still gainfully employed in journalism and doing very, very well. So, I feel like I was there at a really good time for journalism, and it's really developed and shaped me into what I'm doing now.
Iyer says MLive Media Group is okay with anonymous comments on its site.
I think the one thing that I would address, because it always comes up when I talk to people about what I do, is the issue of anonymity and civility in conversation. We on MLive allow anonymous commenters. We haven't tried to institute a Facebook system of commenting like, you know, some of our competitors in other markets, TV markets and other newspaper markets across the state. And there's, you know, many reasons for that. But ultimately, you know, we believe that people have very good reasons for wanting to be anonymous when they're commenting in the digital era. People have employment reasons. They have, you know, concerns about, you know, their employers or their clients, seeing what they have to say about local tax issues or local school board issues. And we respect that. So we instead take an approach that really focuses on the content of the comment rather than the identity of the commenter. And we look very closely at all of our conversations, and we moderate those conversations, taking down comments that contain personal attacks and name-calling and, you know, unverified information that could be slanderous towards other people. And what we are left with, you know, what results from all of that is a very vibrant community conversation, and you can feel that it's different when you visit a story on Grand Rapids, on the Grand Rapids portion of our site versus Flint versus Saginaw. You really get a sense of the community that you're visiting, essentially, through our site, through the tone of the comments on those stories. So we're focused on trying to be as inclusive as possible, and trying to really be the place for civil community conversation within each community that we serve.
That's Jen Iyer, MLive Media Group Statewide Community Engagement Director, and I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
The University Research Corridor, empowering Michigan.
This is an association of the three research universities in Michigan to really collaborate on a deeper level than we have in the past and highlight for ourselves and for the region and for the nation the strength in technology, innovation, new research, investment that we think is going to help change the Michigan economy.
That's University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman.
The mission of the URC is no less than to help transform the Michigan economy and to make this a vibrant place that young people will want to come and stay, that businesses will want to be in, because we are a place where a lot is happening, and we have the brain power for the new economy. It's here. It's in Michigan. We just need to tap it.
Visit us online at urcmich.org.
So Michigan is vibrant. Michigan has all these things, and we want to signal that to the entire world.
Visit the University Research Corridor online at urcmich.org.
The ability to simplify means to eliminate the unnecessary so that the necessary may speak. Hans Hoffman.
I'm Scott Westerman from the Michigan State University Alumni Association with another observation from The Spartan Life.
One of the things you will discover as you become successful is this: the more you do, the more people will ask you to do. Exceed your targets at work, and there will be new, higher targets. Do a great job on one board, and people will want you on a dozen boards. Kaizen, the Japanese word for continuous improvement, is something toward which we should all strive. But be sure you understand your own personal definition of improvement. It doesn't necessarily mean doing more. If you've had a business course, you likely know the name Peter Drucker. As the father of modern management, Drucker gave us a number of good maxims, including the concept of the knowledge worker. What is not well known is that his advice for personal growth includes practicing systematic abandonment. He wrote that people are effective because they say no, because they say, this isn't for me. And he advocated regular reflection on what you can cut out of your daily routine to make room for something more rewarding. I used to start every budget season by telling my team, the time we invest in the new year will be just as important as the money we invest. Our success may well be determined by what we decide we're not going to do. When was the last time you took out a pad of paper or your iPad and listed everything that takes up your time? Try keeping an activity log for 30 days and you'll be surprised how much unproductive, unfulfilling things pop up on that list. Then go back to that bucket list you've been keeping. You know, the things you've always wanted to do but never had the time to do. Start crossing things off your activity list that are sucking energy or aren't generating enough joy and enthusiasm for you. Replace them with things that are on your bucket list. This won't be an easy exercise. Most self-actualized people overbook themselves with many things that are worthwhile and rewarding. You may decide that you will want to stop doing something you enjoy to do something you enjoy more. Sometimes stopping an activity will cause discomfort for people you care about. As you prepare for that tough conversation, remember Herb Swope's advice. "I cannot give you the formula for success," he says, "but I can give you the formula for failure, which is try to please everybody." High-performance people see the world as a huge orchard with hundreds of ripe apples falling off of every tree. They stand at the edge with a small basket made up of time and energy and want to try to grab every last apple to make the most out of every opportunity. Some people are even paralyzed by the fear that they might pick the wrong apple and regret it. They are afraid that if they invest time in a new career path, the self-development course, or a new relationship, and end up not liking it, they will regret their decision. Rather than taking any chance, they do nothing. Your assignment? Live a life of ongoing self-discovery. As Drucker says, what matters is that the knowledge worker, by the time he or she reaches middle age, has developed and nourished a human being rather than a tax accountant or a hydraulic engineer. Realize that you don't have to do it all, that you can start down a road and decide to take a different road later on. Life is really that abundant apple orchard, but you don't have to eat every last one. Nourish the exceptional human being that you are, and remember that in the end, the only one you really have to make happy is you.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
MSU, we love thy shadows.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
Sing our love for alumni.
So what that means is when you graduate from college, we'll help you find your first career. When you move to any city, anywhere, we'll help you connect and settle. If you're mid-career and want to reinvent yourself, we'll help you find a new passion. And if you need advice or a friend anywhere in the world, the MSU Alumni Association will connect you with the 500,000 Spartans out there that are always ready to take your call.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
And thy praises, MSU.
Alumni.msu.edu. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.